Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. And today I have Steve Wiedemann, a writer, scientist, professor, and practitioner of search optimization. Steve Wiedemann lives, breathes, and eats SEO, SEM, and inbound marketing. He's the author of SEO Strategy and Skills, a college textbook, and has personally played a role in the inbound successes of brands that have included Disney, Linksys, Belkin, Public Storage, Honda, Skechers, Applebee's, IHOP, Dole, and others. He leads a team of SEO consultants for franchise, multi-location, and e-commerce brands, and serves as adjunct professor at UC San Diego and Cal State University Fullerton. He also is building the Academy of Search while volunteering time to help improve transparency and industry standards as an agency trainer. Steve, welcome to my show today.
Jonathan, great to be here. And you know, I can tell you are getting better with your voice there. I know in the beginning before the show, you sound a little, but you do actually, you're pulling it off, man. You sound great.
Yeah. Sorry, folks, a little scratchy. It might be a cough or two here, but the show must go on. You know, there's no substitute host for this show.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan. I'm excited to share some experiences, and I'm sure you've got a few questions lined up. It's hard to start after an opening like that. But when I look back at the last, you know, two decades of really giving my heart and soul to, you know, the industry, it's kind of rewarding. I got some goosebumps, I won't lie.
Well, and you know, a lot of people have funny feelings about people who do SEO work. They think they think it's like black box or white hat, or like, you know, is it dark stuff? Is it secret? No one seems to really know. When in the old days, you'd buy an SEO contract and be like, what did I just pay for? I have no idea what these people did. So I think that guys in your industry have an uphill battle to fight in terms of reputation.
We still do. That's correct. Yep. And you think after, you know, years and years and years of the industry evolving, that would change. But the fact is, because you're basically hacking algorithms, right? So that your clients can place better and get more free revenue from search. It's a really kind of a sticky industry, because again, you've got so many people that are black boxing their strategies and techniques, probably because they shouldn't be doing some of those things. And then there are those of us that believe, you know, in sort of Jim Rohn's quote of you don't have to do extraordinary things to be successful. You only have to do ordinary things extraordinarily well. So I think people get jaded because they expect fast results from something that takes a lot of water and sunlight and nurturing. And I can tell you probably 40% of all SEO clients get frustrated by month 4 to 6 and give up, while the competition just keep hammering away at improving content, improving off page, improving, you know, their search experience or search appearance. So I'm with you. I get it.
So let's break it down. Like, first of all, let's talk about what SEO is. Sure. And do you have any statistics on how many companies or how many websites are actively being SEO managed Is there any data on that?
You know,
that would be really interesting.
I wish there were, but I think everybody in some degree or another is doing SEO, right? Especially after the pandemic, whether they call it SEO or not, right? They're trying to figure out, hey, how come my Google listing isn't appearing in the maps? How come I, whatever? And they start doing some research and, you know, and they sort of start hacking their way through it on their own, you know, without a roadmap or without a guide, you know, to go after. And that's great. I'm glad that business owners are starting to do that. Some are falling victims to the, you know, the dial a minutes, you know, I'll make you number one in Google phone calls, which, mm-hmm. you know, if you do get one of those calls, I suggest talking to a consultant before making a decision, because those folks will really put you on the conveyor belt and not really do a lot for you after, you know, the initial setup. In fact, in some cases, they'll actually hijack your listings and, you know, extort you for them if you decide to cancel. It's pretty scary. So definitely do your research and your diligence. So I think when we look at defining, you know, what is SEO in today's world, it's really just making sure that we appear in searches when somebody's typing in our products, services, or might have a future interest in what we offer. And we're not just talking about the blue links and black text that you see in Google. I mean, that is a big percent of it. But search results are very blended now. We've got video carousels and images. We've got paid ads. We've got ads in the map 3-pack that you see in a blended web result. You've got questions and answers. You get over to the other tabs in Google, you've got image search and video search and news search, right? You can appear in all of those different types of search results.
Yeah.
There's YouTube, there's Amazon, there's so many different search engines where people are going to find you. And I feel like a lot of business owners, once they start getting into SEO, get really hung up on blue links and black text, and that, you know, it really is just a fraction of the opportunity out there.
Yeah. So let's just be clear. Blue links and black text refer to showing up in a search when someone's looking for your type of service. Very obvious, but maybe not so obvious to the listener. So so I think what's really interesting about you, Stephen, is that you're not just an agency that does like SEO work, because that's not really your focus. You're like the agency to agencies.
We get like, that a lot. Yeah, the agency's agency. I've heard that so many times.
Right. I mean, it's like you're the trainer who trains the trainers. Is that true? So what you're speaking from an authority, because you're basically working, your clients are doing their own SEO and you're consulting and advising them.
Right. Our vision is that every business eventually in-houses SEO. But mm-hmm. for those who, you know, that way there's, again, 100% transparency. But for those who just don't have the resources or bandwidth or interest to do that, and it happens, you know, it's, you lose a little bit of the brand voice and the content strategy. You lose a little bit of the, you know, the narrative, I think. But there still are agencies that do a really good job. And for those agencies and who come to us and they say, hey, we have this really large account. They've got 4,000 storage locations. What are we going to do? And so they come to us. We help them do some procurement work, you know, to bring somebody in-house who can manage it. And then while we're bringing in those resources for them, helping them and working with their HR teams, you know, we're setting a plan of action and playing a sort of a white label liaison, sometimes a partner liaison, to try to support their clients. So we'll come in and help the sales team to build better collateral, and the project management team to know, you know, what tools and resources need to be in there. Their list of things to manage. We'll give the writers some training on how to do keyword research and measure the performance of their pages without stuffing keywords and, you know, making it a poor user experience. Work with the technology teams to make sure that they're bought in, right? Mm.
Wow. So that sounds like very large corporations that have lots of different teams. So mm-hmm. a lot of our listeners are probably smaller, mid-sized companies, family businesses. What are a few ways that these businesses can get started with SEO without mm-hmm. feeling overwhelmed with the technical jargon? And like, again, is this a must game for most businesses? Is it a must game for more retail brands or business consumer brands? What are some ways to get started? And is it a must, like, should everyone be getting getting
involved? I would say it's a very important part of the marketing mix, Jonathan. I think okay. you should be doing all things. You should be experimenting with radio and TV and local ads and have a street team, do some guerrilla marketing, build relationships with brands that are in similar verticals. You know, really, really don't try to avoid being myopic around digital marketing. If mm-hmm. you get into that, that boat, unfortunately, it becomes addictive because you want to be number one in Google and you forget everything else and you drop every other marketing thing that you're doing.
Right.
But what you don't know is those other marketing things are actually playing a role in search. They're actually, when people are searching for your brand or your brand and they modify it by the different products or services they're looking for related to your brand, those searches tell the search engines that you're relevant to those queries and they start showing you for even the non-branded searches. So I would say if you were to look at your web analytics, if you haven't mm-hmm. yet, you know, contact your web host or the person who set up your website and say, I'd like to look at my web analytics, you'll see that most of your traffic comes from search.
Right.
So, you know, beyond that, you'll see maybe some social, maybe you'll see your email newsletters, maybe you'll see direct traffic from those people who already patronize your business. Mm-hmm. But normally the majority of your traffic is going to come from search and 80% of that is going to come from Google. So mm-hmm. yes, I would say it's the new phone book, right?
Right.
So you definitely need to pay attention to it and learn some of the basics, you know, to start managing it in-house, even if it's just, you know, 30 minutes a week. Hey, Monday morning, get your coffee, log in, do your 30 minutes of SEO, and then enjoy the rest of your week doing what you do best.
Okay, so core elements to consider in building a comprehensive SEO strategy. So web analytics is one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why do any marketing if you can't measure if it's working or not?
Absolutely. What's another core element?
I would say technology. Choosing mm-hmm. the right website for promoting your products and services. I would avoid kind of the DIY sites like the GoDaddy website builders and the Wix and the Weeblies. They're very restrictive of what you're capable of doing from a search engine optimization standpoint. So I would definitely talk to
I have to say you're right on that. I mean, I spent a year optimizing my website on Wix and I don't think I saw a whole lot of really good results. And, you know, I built the website mostly myself after someone helped me with the template. And I wanted to get away from WordPress because it was too difficult. I wanted to manage it myself. But frankly, the site just loads too slowly. There's just too much junk that keeps right. the site pages from loading too slowly. And I'm now just making that migration over. And I know that my team has already done some stuff on the SEO on my Wix site that's sure. making things improve, but I'm looking forward to a much brighter future. I think it's a really important part of business. So yeah, absolutely. Those DIY sites don't work. Okay, back to the core elements.
So that's number one, right? Starting right. with technology and
right.
making sure your site can be crawled and indexed and ranked. Mm-hmm. And that you don't have, you know, several similar URLs to have search engines try to figure out which one should be indexed. And mm-hmm. some of those content management systems, you know, will create these really strange URLs and Google will have like 30 versions of the same content. And they're like, which version should I index? So it's important that you do kind of come up with or use something that's more of an industry standard, because those industry standard management systems have already been, you know, hacked and nurtured to get to a place where they're at least foundationally ready for SEO. Number two is going to be your content. Mm-hmm. So if you offer products and services, do you have a page to talk about each of those products and services? Have you performed a search for your products and services in your area? Or if you're not targeting a specific area, just your products and services to see what shows up in the search results mm-hmm. and then analyze those results. Say, hey, does my page have all these same elements and more? Is my page a better experience? Can I get through my page on my mobile device with just my thumb and complete a transaction or complete a form fill or complete a chat with only using one hand and my thumb? Mm-hmm. And if you can do those things and provide a great user experience and provide all the same type of content that your competitors are providing on that specific website address, not your homepage. Your homepage should be what should show up for your brand or right. your company name. It's a specific page that you created. So a lawyer, for example, you're a local mm-hmm. lawyer and you are targeting I don't know, San Diego, California. Mm-hmm. And you offer services for people who've been in car accidents and truck accidents and motorcycle accidents. So under your practice areas page, you're going to create a subpage for each of those different practice areas. And you're going to optimize a title and a description that show up in Google search results. Normally those fields are in the content management system. If they're not, there are plugins and extensions that you can add, like the Yoast SEO plugin or RightMath. Shopify has its own SEO plugins as well. So that way you can provide a really good, helpful experience to somebody who's looking for that specific thing, because they're not going to scroll down your practice areas page after clicking the results. It's to find
that car right accident, to that
truck
page.
Accident thing. Yeah, yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So there's the other fundamental. The next one is going to be your off-page visibility. As search engines, especially Google, are getting better, they're looking at what's happening off your website to help define what your business does and what you offer. They're using these things called entity relationships, where they can see your company name as an entity and how often it's mentioned with search terms that coincide with what you want to rank for. Years ago, I used to rank for the term. Oh, sorry, you have a question?
No, I think that's unbelievable. Like, what are they searching for? Like, how many times people visited you on Google Maps? Or
I think what they're looking for is how many times they're finding your business name with the search terms that you want your business name to become semantic to.
Okay.
Right? And this is kind of a funny story, is when for 12 years, I ranked number one for SEO expert. It was a challenge my boss at Disney gave me in order to be able to start using some SEO on a new site called Adventures by Disney. And I hit that challenge. And over time, you know, I was focusing on my business, my freelance world. And I wasn't really doing anything with it. But whenever I was writing content and contributing content, I was always mentioned in context as Steve Wiedem, an SEO expert, whether it was in a news article somewhere or, you know, as a blog post that I contributed somewhere. My name was always kind of becoming semantic. So you look at the top ranking results and it didn't make any sense. The number one resort was me, but the number two guy had better content and he had stronger links and you know, would have been a better page because mine had been kind of neglected for a few years. But I still ranked number one because if you were to do a search for my name and the phrase SEO expert, both of those in quotes within a Google search, I came up some 4,000 times. And the second guy in his entity only came up about 1,200. So the fact that Google thought I was more relevant based on how it saw my name off the website played an important role. And it helped with talking about some of this off-page SEO work. It contributed to what Google uses fundamentally, which is their PageRank, you know, their PageRank algorithms. So they actually use links as a voting system to determine how important your page is or how relevant your page is. And the higher the quality and quantity and velocity of those links that are coming into your website, the more Google thinks, hey, this site's live, it's helpful, it's active. I'm seeing all these new links coming in because I'm crawling the web and every time I find one, it's a vote for the page. So we want to continuously find ways to get other websites to link to us, hopefully organically without us having to pick up the phone. And we do that by getting really creative. We share a lot of upper funnel type content. We get with the content writer and we say, hey, let's go to a site called answerthepublic.com and let's put in our product or service and see what kind of questions people have about our products and services. The what, who, when, how, why, strategy, tips, ideas, checklists, all that upper funnel content that solves problems. And what happens is we start creating really good upper funnel content. Other people are researching for the same words that we solve the problems for and referencing our article in their article as a point of reference, especially if we've got images and videos that they can reference or charts and graphs and data, you know, that's not already online somewhere. So we can provide that content. Other folks will search for it, find it, reference it, link to it. And we don't have to do, you know, a lot of outreach to say, hey, will you link to my website?
Right.
So I think that off-page signal is still a key component. It's absolutely still part of Google's ranking system. They recently, in one of their link schemes guidelines, they actually linked to an article that they wrote around PageRank. This was recently. It was taken off a while back, and now it's back on. So PageRank is still an important thing that they talk about quite a bit.
Yep.
So we talked about those core fundamentals, right? Is technology. Can our site be crawled, indexed, and ranked? Two, content. Can people find the helpful information that they're looking for that's more helpful than what our competition has and get through an experience on their phone with just their thumb? Can search engines and other users find us off our website on other places? Maybe our competitors have been listed. And then the last part we really didn't talk about is how we show up in the search results. So when you do perform that search and you're looking at your competitors and you see your listing there, does your listing stand out? Would people want to click on your listing more so than the competition if they don't know any of you? Right? Do you have perhaps a little video thumbnail next to your listing? Do you have some star ratings below your listing? Maybe you have some helpful frequently asked questions in the search results beneath your listing. Using the Google Rich Snippet Gallery, so it's a free tool, free little gallery that Google provides, you can pick and choose from some things that you think would be really helpful for your users. And then go back to your web developer and say, I want this code on my page, and here's the content that this that should be within the code and on the page itself, so that you can stand out in a search result and get more of those clicks. So your content gets you to that second page of the search results through the keywords and helpfulness. The links and the off-page visibility will get you to page one of Google within 3 to 6 months. And the search behavior of what users do when they see your listing will move you up from that first page to the first position, you know, usually within 6 to 12 months. So within a year, you can get the top position for your product or service. Again, if you make sure your tech is on par and your content is awesome, your off page continues to improve, and your search appearance is better than what the competition has.
Wow. And now what some people think that advertising with Google plays a role in this as well. Does it make sense to advertise for those keywords during that first 12 months before you rise to that? Does Google elevate you faster because you're spending money with them? I mean, you may not be able to answer that because you don't know, but what can you tell us about that?
Sure. It's a two-part question. Part one is it's a correlation versus causation. You hear that a lot in the SEO industry. It's almost an annoying cliche at this point, but it's true. If users see you in the paid search and the organic search results, you've basically buried your competition because now you've got two listings at the top. They're more likely to click on you, right? If they click on your organic result more so than they do other results, then you're going to move up in the search results over time. But there's no direct correlation. By buying ads in Google, you're not going to move up in search ranking simply because you're buying ads. In fact, that'd be illegal for them to do that. It would be a violation of their whole philosophy around organic search.
Sure.
But there is a correlation causation. If you are buying ads and your listing does show up in paid and organic, the data shows that you have a higher click-through rate of people clicking on your listing than you do if you don't. Now, I always recommend augmenting your search strategy with paid because you can leverage the data from paid. If you were to look at your Google Analytics and organic search keywords, the majority of keywords are going to be bundled into this one keyword called not provided. And they used to have that search term in there. You actually would see all the words that people would find your page for. Now you can't. But if you advertise, you can go to your search query report and see what search queries actually resulted in sales or leads for your business. Mm. It seems, I don't know, kind of controversial. You can pay for the data, but we're not going to give it to you free now.
Right.
Like why? What's the difference? So whatever. They're saying it's around privacy. But the point is you can take those search terms that convert well for you, add them into your content, and you're going to do two things from that. You're going to get lower cost per click in the paid ad bidding auction. You're going to get lower cost per leads, right? Because now your quality score is better because your search terms that you're bidding on are actually on, you know, the page itself. And the second thing that's going to happen is you're going to continue to collect some pretty insane data that you can then move over to your paid ad group, so, or to your organic search strategy as well. So I think there's a huge competitive advantage of doing paid ads. What I would be careful of is if you don't have a lot of experience in paid, get some training or some help as you get it started so that you don't become one of those jaded business owners that ends up spending $10,000. And let's say you are a lawyer and you bid it on the keyword lawyer and you said, hey, I want to show up in paid ads for lawyer. You spend $10,000 in a month, right? You go back and like, this didn't work. I didn't get any leads. You get with somebody with some paid search experience and they help you navigate over to that search terms report we talked about. And it turns out that that personal injury lawyer was actually showing up when people were typing in corporate lawyer, divorce lawyer, immigration lawyer. And he's like, I don't do any of those things, but I paid $10,000 to show up for all those words. Mm. Right. You didn't plan your campaign strategically to prevent you showing up for the wrong search terms. And then you weren't monitoring it every day so that when you did see those divorce and immigration, that you could exclude those from searches so that you don't show up for those different keywords. So I think having a little bit of expertise on your side as you're provisioning your paid ads can reduce your costs and your waste. And then once it's going and it's working, you can leverage that data to augment your organic SEO.
I think so many of the firms that I work with are using outside agencies, including myself, and it's so hard to know whether to trust them for, do they do good work? And it's something that, it's in the marketing mix, but you're wearing a lot of hats as a small, medium-sized business owner that you don't often have the time to be able to really dive in and understand, are they doing good work? And so you just basically judge it by, are you getting results? So this is a difficult field for a lot of people, I think.
Right. Yeah. I think maybe setting some KPIs, with your key performance indicators with the agencies you're using can help. We use a Google sheet. In fact, I'll share a link to it. I share this with my students at UC San Diego and Cal State Fullerton. It's this template that we use in Google Sheets. It's really easy to use. Mm-hmm. It has rows for each of the things that you want to measure. Mm-hmm. And I've highlighted in green what sort of the bottom line business KPIs typically are, such as traffic, average position in search results, revenue and leads, right? Those are the most important. That's what the business owner cares about. But us as the digital marketer, we also care about how we're earning links. We care about the technology, status. Do we have a lot of broken links on our website and Google's having kind of a poor experience when they crawl to our site? So it's got some technical attributes in there. We've also got like our share of voice in search. So for tracking our search terms, whether you're using SEMrush or Conductor, or maybe you're just using your free Google Search Console and you're tracking your rankings, what's our share of voice compared to the competition who are trying to rank for those same keywords? That way we can set some goals and say, hey, by the end of the year, because we're going to have a column for every month in our Google sheet. At the end of the year, you can see this column at the end of what our goal is and how we're pacing to meet that goal. So when we have our conversation with our SEO agency or even our in-house digital marketer, we can say, how are we doing with meeting our KPIs? Mm-hmm. Well, with off-page, our goal was, to earn, 100 really high quality links this year. And we're at 60. Great. Keep up the good work. How are we doing with our share of voice? Well, our goal was to go from 11% to 15% this year. And we're at 13. So we're making progress. Hey, that's great. How are we doing with traffic? Well, our traffic goal this year was to get it up to 10,000 visits a month. Well, what are we at currently? We're at 9. Sweet. Mm-hmm. We're almost there. Right. So having that is a...
That's great. What is share of voice, Stephen? That's not a term I'm familiar with.
Sure. Market share, right?
Okay.
So let's say we're tracking 100 keywords for personal injury lawyer, car accident lawyer, whatever. We're going with this lawyer example.
Yep.
We're tracking all those search terms and we're going to track the top competitors who appear for those search terms. Mm-hmm. And our percent of what ownership of those search terms and the search results is our share of voice.
Okay.
So let's say, looking at let's look at IHOP for fun. IHOP has some 14 to 20% market share, depending on which search terms we're tracking. Whereas Denny's and Cracker Barrel have a smaller share of voice of the keywords that we're tracking. Mm-hmm. So we're tracking like 6,000 keywords or something. It's crazy because they've got like 2,000 locations. And so we look at that and we say, hey, what we want to do is make sure that by following this little trend chart, that every month we're growing in market share and our share of voice, and that we're monitoring our competition, because if we suddenly see a spike or a drop with what's going on with our competition, we can analyze what they did and make sure that, you know, that we're following the same footprints or not, if they're going the other direction. It's just a great way to monitor over time to make sure that, the competition isn't flanking you by doing something without you knowing. There's nothing worse than looking at your analytics a year later and realizing, oh my God, our competitors got ahead of us. When did that happen? I don't know. We weren't monitoring it.
Okay. So let's talk about these multi-location businesses. IHOP is an extreme example. They've got a lot more locations than our listeners do, but our listeners might have several locations. So they have to have different keywords for each of those locations. Is that right? And they need to have maybe a landing page, like is the case of the San Diego lawyer. If he has four offices in San Diego, or an office in San Diego, one in San Francisco, one in Los Angeles, he needs to have a different campaign going for each of those locations. Am I right?
So for local SEO, there are four factors. And one of those is, a custom page for the primary office, right? And and you have to decide, do I want to create sub pages for each of those, categories that I offer in those areas? Or do I instead just want to have that one page that I can add to my Google business listing that includes a lot of those same practice area services or menus that I have, across all locations? It's a business decision whether you want to create the sub pages. Sometimes it makes sense. For Meineke Car Care, it made sense to have a sub page underneath each location's page for oil change coupons and for muffler repair and auto repair. It made sense because it's a very competitive market.
Right.
But for Applebee's or IHOP, does it make sense to have a sub page for every single menu item? Not really. Not when you have 2,000 locations and they're pretty much the same menu item across the board. So the four areas that we'll pay attention to is making sure our business information is correct and accurate in all the places that buy their data from these databases. So Data Axle is one of them, Localese and Foursquare. But don't do it yourself. Use tools that get you, cheap bulk pricing, like Bright Local or Moz Local. SEMrush even now has a version of that same data management tool to make sure that your data, your business information is correct and accurate and consistent. Number two is going to be that local page we were talking about. And if you want to reverse engineer some of the work that we've done, look at the IHOP and Applebee's location pages. We keep doing our best to add attributes that we think are helpful to users, speeding up the pages so that, they follow all Google's tech guidelines to provide a fast experience. The third thing that we're going to do is make sure that every month we're doing something to promote our business off our website. Maybe it's just a monthly or quarterly or even annual event that we're going to tell local businesses near us about, so that they can, share our business name, address, phone number on their website, so that Google's finding that more often. We call those citations, right, or business listings. And part of that, of course, if you go through the list, starts at the databases, which are part of the part one. Next is going to be your search engines, Google, Yahoo, Local, and Bing Local. Next is going to be your navigation engines like MapQuest and TomTom and Here.com, which is Nokia, I believe. Mm-hmm. But then there's your local social, right? Your Yelp and your Facebook page and even Foursquare, which is also a database, has a listing for you for social local. Well, next would be your actual hyper-local directories, like your regional, such as your local chamber of commerce or mycity.org/business directory, getting into all those places. So these citations do help. I think the latest study showed like 7% of your local rankings now have to do with the citations that you have off the website. That last factor of the four is going to be your business reviews, because nobody clicks on a one-star review. And I mentioned how important search appearance was. Mm-hmm. And if there's three listings in the map and you've got, a three-star review from six people and your competitor who's right above you has 243 reviews and has a 4.5 rating, mm-hmm. they're probably going to click on that competitor more than you.
Exactly. Wow.
So those are the four factors to pay attention to.
My head is spinning from all the knowledge you have, Steve. It's your passion for this is outstanding.
Thank you.
And your knowledge is the best I've ever run across in anyone in the industry.
Jonathan, it's all I do. And, you know, we have this study, if you're interested, yes. on our website. Just go to Wiedemann.com. And it's the very first link in the navigation called Local SEO Pages. And it includes an actual infographic that you can give to your developer and say, make my location pages look like this.
Gotcha. Great. Awesome. Steve, how do people get a hold of you if they have questions, they want to learn more about how maybe your agency could help them, or if they're a fit for your services?
Right. Well, we're not doing a lot of service type stuff these days, but you never know. I would say the first place to start is our Academy of Search. You know, it's free with the code SEO Steve. For your listeners, just go to academyofsearch.com, sign up for the $600 program, use SEO Steve, and you'll get free access to it. I'm available pretty much everywhere. We just handle SEO Steve. Right. And if you want to talk to anyone on the team, we're just Wiedemann, W-I-I-D-E-M-A-N, everywhere online.
Amazing. Wow. My head is spinning. I'm going to have to listen to this recording again, just so I can get this off to my people and make sure they're executing on all the stuff you've done. Thanks so much for sharing your wisdom today.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
All right. If you've enjoyed this, gotten some value, please share it with others. Listen, subscribe at DisruptiveSuccessorShow.com.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful, so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.